Hello friends, and happy Pride Month. First of all, I apologize for the gap in our episodes. Sam and I took a well-deserved vacation and have been gone for a couple weeks. However, we are back, and once again, we invited some special guests and friendos of the pod, Mark and David. They are absolutely lovely humans, and we had a total blast with this recording. Once again, we recorded over Zoom, so there is going to be a dip in audio quality, but the content is amazing. Since we covered a whopping 4 songs this time around, we naturally broke this up into 2 parts. What you're about to hear is part 1 of 2. So please stay tuned for the upcoming part 2, which will be out very shortly. Without further ado, let's get into the episode.
Welcome to Two Songs, One Couple, where a geeky metalhead husband swaps songs
with his nerdy country girl wife. Grab a drink, get comfy, and join us on our musical chat. All right, friends. Welcome in. Welcome to Two Songs, One Couple.
Hello, hello, hello.
Today we have 2 very special guests. We have David and Mark, good friends of ours, but we brought them here to celebrate Pride Month with us.
Yay! Happy Pride!
Welcome in! Happy Pride! Happy Pride Month!
Indeed. Oh, I should be looking forward to this month and to be on here.
Well, it looks like you just came back from something very fun.
Oh, yeah, just a little bit. Came back from Star Wars Celebration. It's quite the week, to say the least.
All the pictures that you posted, you looked like you were having the time of your life.
That's like a big kid. Finally got to go to Disneyland after like 20 plus years, and I got to see Galaxy's Edge, and that was something else.
That sounds amazing. And David, I know you've been frequenting the music venues in your area for the past few weeks. How has that been?
It's been pretty awesome. Being in San Francisco, it's been a lot easier to get to concerts now than it has been before. So this last week, I was able to go to Midnight Oil, OMD, and Tears for Fears, which Mark went to Tears for Fears too, and they had Garbage opening, which was incredible.
Wow. Dude, like 3 concerts in 1 week. I don't know how you do that. Like I'm exhausted just hearing about it.
He had a week where he went like every day of the week.
Wow. Oh my God.
There's been a couple of those weeks this year. I'm up to 45 for the year so far.
Whoa, 45. Holy crap.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, when he has a week that has no concerts, I'm like, are you okay?
What are you doing around the house? Get out of here. I need me time.
Oh, he's been God. Going concert crazy since we moved up here. It's just like kid in a candy store. It's been awesome to see, to be honest.
But yeah, it's Pride Month. And let's start off with talking about what do you all do for Pride? At least for us, full disclosure, everyone probably knows this. Sam and I are not of the LGBT crowd, but we are allies. And 1 year we went with one of our friends to Pride. And it was wild. Like we saw the parade, which we were warned not to go to because veterans of the Pride parade actually don't go to the parade, apparently. Yeah. They do all the stuff on the sign. We're like, this is the first time we got to see the parade. And it was exciting at first. And then it gets a little old. So we left and then we actually saw the side street festivities. I'm like, wow, this is where the action is.
Yeah.
They were absolutely right.
Accurate.
But it's super hard to like live like in the San Francisco Bay Area, not go to see the Pride Parade. Like, I feel like that you have to do it. You have to at least do it once, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's some great things about it. One thing I want to say real quick about it was I saw the Vietnamese American representation of in Pride. It's very tiny when I compare it to other groups that I saw go by. And I'm like, wow, I was excited to see it, but also sad that it was so small. I know there's more. I know there's more Vietnamese that are part of the LGBT, but it's a very conservative community and a very conservative culture. So I'm actually not very surprised that it's so small. But anyway, enough talking about us. Let's talk about David and Mark. What do you two do?
For this month, it's obviously getting out to the different parades. I mean, I still love the parade. For me, when I see, well, what used to be called Dykes on Bikes and now is the Women's Motorcycle Contingents, I get such a rush because what a way to start the parade, right?
Yeah.
And it just goes from there. And like you said, after a while, it's like, I kind of just bow out. It's like, okay, I've seen enough, right? You know, unless there's a particular person or group that I'm waiting on to see. But I've been going for, what, 20 plus years, and I still love seeing the parade.
Aww.
So I don't get tired of it. And I'm going to make it a point to be there for that this year, because this is going to be the first time I get to do it being back home in SF. This particular pride is going to mean a lot to me. I cannot wait to attend it. But I mean, other than that, I mean, the podcast I'm on, Pink Milk, where we talk Star Wars queerly, you know, I mean, it's a matter of whether we do it year round or not, but especially during this time of the month, you know, whether we highlight queer creators or just talk about subjects that are very important to us, or whether it be about our journey or whatnot. We share our own experience. We obviously don't talk for everyone, but we also want to be able to put the word out there about what we went through, because somebody else out there may be going through something similar. And you want to be able to share those experiences. And I, you know, there's so many people out there who feel alone, you know, and they feel like they don't have anyone to reach out to. And I wish I would have had more stories and more content and more TV shows and music to be able to feel like I was like on this island and I had nobody to turn to, right?
Yeah.
And even if I would have had friends who were supporting me, it's just the fact that I was so scared to come out then in the 90s, right?
Mm-hmm.
The point is to be visible and to be out there and to share your stories, because that goes a long way. In short, to give back.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I love to celebrate this month.
Ah, oh, awesome. You're going to make me shed a tear.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Ah, damn. That's beautiful. Awesome. How about you, Dave?
I think similar to Mark, one of my favorite things about Pride is just seeing so many people out there. Like, I've seen the crowds and I've read that over 1 million people come to San Francisco Pride.
Wow.
That's more than the population of San Francisco itself. It has a really wide reach. And I mean, not all of them are gay, but we love that so many people come to support us.
Yeah.
That absolutely means so much to us. And it's also interesting to see it because I grew up in a fairly small town in Nebraska. I mean, it wasn't really small by Nebraska standards, but it was about 20,000 people. So it was still pretty small. And we never had anything like that. So to come out here and see like all these people, it's still mind-blowing each time. And there was one year that my best friend Logan visited and happened to be during Pride weekend. And like Logan is one of my biggest supporters, always has been. So I took him to Pride and like he had a blast there. He's like, wow, this is so cool to see this many people.
It is. It's definitely like an experience. If you've never done it, I highly, highly encourage you to like head on out there and check it out at least for a little bit. There's such an energy to it. It's hard to explain unless you go out there and you experience it for yourself.
Yeah, everyone just exudes love and positivity.
Yes.
And the parade and festival has like no cost at all. Like you can make a donation, but it's accessible to anyone. So just come on by.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Once again, this is Peter and Sam from Two Songs, One Couple. We have special guests David and Mark joining us today. And let's get to the music. Let's start off with David. A simple word or two.
Song that you just heard was from Bob Mould, the former frontman of hardcore punk and alternative groups Husker Du and Sugar. We went back to 2005 for that song, Days of Rain, off the album Body of Song. So a bit of history about this guy. Bob Mould is most famous for being the singer and guitarist of hardcore punk band Husker Du. They were active from 1979 to 1988 from St. Paul, Minnesota, which is my mom's hometown. And the band Husker Du actually had two LGBT members. Both Bob Mould and drummer, songwriter, and backup vocalist Grant Hart were gay. The other member, Greg Norton, was straight, but he was probably the gayest looking one of the three. He had the... Like, he had the gay mustache that was very common in the 80s.
He was actually pretty cool looking, I should say.
Yeah, he was like hipster looking. Very cool. But Husker Du, a band with two gay members, was very influential among alternative rock bands in the 90s. For instance, members of the Pixies, Metallica, and Nirvana have cited Husker Du as one of their influences. After Husker Du broke up, Bob Mould and Grant Hart went on to work on separate projects. But sadly, Grant Hart passed away in 2017 due to hepatitis C and liver cancer. Greg Norton took a break for a while, but he recently returned to making music. Bob Mould didn't officially come out until 1994, but it was kind of an open secret among those that were familiar with the scene. 1992 is when he started to open the closet door. At the time, he was with his band, Sugar, and he had what would be the biggest song of his career with If I Can't Change Your Mind. It wasn't like a top 40 smash or anything, but it did get decent rotation on MTV. At the end of the video for that song, he holds up a photo with him and his partner, and then he turned the photo around, and on the back was written, "This is not your parents' world."
Aww.
The first time I heard of Bob Mould was actually in 2002 as a solo artist, when his album Modulate was out. And at that time, I was listening to a lot of singer-songwriters, and I thought he was a singer-songwriter. Like, I did not have any idea what Husker Du was. And also, during this time, he experimented with a little bit of techno, which confused a lot of his longtime fans. And he actually released a flat-out techno album, also in 2002, under the pseudonym Loud Bomb, which is an anagram of Bob Mould.
Oh, smart.
Awesome.
And then a few years later, he released another techno album with the less subtle name Blow Off. But he seems to have since gotten that out of his system. And his later albums are returned to the louder hardcore punk style of his early years. But I am really grateful for the singer-songwriter and techno time period, because I don't think I would have appreciated all of his stuff as much if I didn't discover his music at that time. The song that you heard, Days of Rain, was basically a singer-songwriter song, and it would not be out of place on KFOG or any other AAA stations. It's slow and melodic, and it features a cello solo by Amy Dominguez in the bridge.
I was wondering about that.
After that, it builds up to a crescendo before going out. Lyrically, it's the classic breakup song. He hasn't actually said whether or not that's what it's about, but the album was released shortly after he broke up with his partner at that time.
Makes sense.
So that's Days of Rain by Bob Mould.
Okay. Thank you, DJ Dave.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the research and the factoids. That was very well done.
That, in a nutshell, is the reason why I love this man.
This motherfucker's thorough. Okay, so I'll start off. So I knew nothing about Bob Mould. He lives in a musical world that's a blind spot for me. I don't know anything about punk, really, like the hardcore punk scene. I know the popular ones. I know like the Ramones, Green Day, which is getting into the pop punk world. That's another story. But when it comes to this type of punk, and like, I guess he has some ties with Fugazi and stuff like that. I don't know. This is a question mark for me. And so I felt like, oh, okay, this is awesome, you know, because you're expanding my musical palette, which is part of the point of this podcast. I have never heard his voice or guitar before, but that's not true. When I started looking into it, I see he contributed to the film version of Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
This is correct.
I love that show.
Sam and I both have heard his guitar playing a lot of times in our ears, not even knowing that is Bob Mould.
So he must know Stephen Trask pretty well, the guy who helped create all the music then. Interesting. Mm-hmm. That I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's like the one Broadway show that Peter actually likes.
Yes. Nice. I am not a fan of Broadway in general, but when it comes to Hedwig and the Angry Inch, I'm a fanboy for it. Hell so good.
Hell yeah.
And then, going back to the song itself, they've hit on all the points that I've been kind of thinking in my head, where it's like singer-songwriter. Like the intro reminded me of U2's With or Without You, the tempo, the feel, even like the alarm clock kind of sound that's underneath it all gives me those vibes. And when I heard his vocals for the first time, I'm like, this guy is kind of out of tune. But in this sense, it kind of works, because if I look at what Bob Dylan has done, it's like that guy can't really sing, right? But he does it quite well. He does what he does well, and it fits in that folky sort of singer-songwriter feel. So once I adjusted my mindset and I listened to the song several times, I'm like, okay, this makes sense. And now that you have said that he comes from a punk world, I can hear this guy singing punk versus this more melodic kind of singing. And to move on to the string interlude or the cello interlude, that's actually my favorite part, Dave. It's beautiful sounding. And then the final chorus comes in, there's more guitar playing, and then it just crescendos and layers upon layers. And one last note that I want to say about the music, at least, is the guitar playing that goes over it or under it, however you want to look at it. It almost feels like throughout the majority of the song, there's some sort of guitar line. It just changes over and over, almost like it's a guitar solo behind the scenes. But it's not over the top in such a way that he's just like shredding over the top and taking attention away from the vocals and the other instruments. It's done in a very tasteful manner, and I appreciate that about the song. Yeah, that's my impression. And lyric wise, my immediate reaction was failed relationship, or I thought maybe it's a start of a relationship. They're starting to date and he's not sure if the other party is into him. I was bouncing back and forth between the two, but based on the background you gave, Dave, it makes a lot more sense that, this is a failed relationship. All right, that wraps it up for me. Sam, what did you think?
Yeah, so a lot of what I was going to say, y'all have said already. I'll keep it pretty short, but when I was listening to the song, it reminded me a little bit of like David Bowie. I got like some Ben Folds 5 in there. It was giving me like Wonderwall vibes too. So I was like, okay, this is bringing me back to like the 90s chill alternative rock-ish. The song kind of starts off a little bit slow, a little bit simple, and then it definitely builds, especially when you get about halfway in and you have like the cello and then the stacked harmonies and then the guitar. I think melody gets a little bit more complicated about halfway in. I liked that kind of slow build, slow burn. There were those like bright guitar like brings in the beginning of the song.
Technical term, huh?
Yeah, very technical term. The bring.
I'm going to start using that now.
But y'all know what I'm talking about. I was very surprised to hear that like his origins were in like punk, because that's extremely different than this song is like conveying to me. I don't hear the punk at all in it. And so I was pleasantly surprised to hear that he explored different musical genres, because I think that this song is pretty darn cool. It does make me want to like check out his punk sound, because now I'm curious. But yeah, like overall, it's like a very chill, almost sad song. It's like a bright sad song, you know what I mean? Like it's not like a typical ballad where you want to cry, but it kind of still hints at sadness.
Yeah, it sounds optimistic despite the subject matter.
Yeah.
It's upbeat, but not necessarily like happy.
Yes, exactly.
But you should describe it that way, because that's the same way I talk about the Downtown Lights that David introduced me to. Even though he goes, that's more sad than that. I'm like, nope, I find optimism somewhere in there, right? There's something about that. So that seems to be a theme with a lot of the songs that David is into, just so you know.
So he's searching out that optimism despite like the pain.
Yeah, I thank him for introducing me to not only Bob Mould, but the Blue Nile, because that changed the way I listen to music just in general.
Aw, that's so sweet. Well, that's a great segue into like, what do you think, Mark?
Okay, so with this, I'm not going to, go too much into what you folks already covered music-wise and everything. There's so much history here. Like, I didn't really know about the actual artist and just the fact that You know, he came out very late in life. It was like 1994 in a Spin article I was reading. And just the fact that now he's obviously able to be his more authentic self. And if that's all coming out in this song, which came out in 2005, then, you know, it says a lot more about where he is in life. And this could not necessarily be about a current relationship, but someone in the past, right? And so it's interesting to look at those lyrics and to read into, you know, what was going on through the artist's mind at that particular time. Were they able to share their relationship with other people or not? Was that part of the problem as well too, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting. It's like I said, this, I'm very new to pop most music, but with David playing the music around me little by little, I'm taking these in. And these are artists I wouldn't necessarily sit down and listen to, but they'll be playing in the background. I'll be doing my own thing. And all of a sudden I just stop them all. Hey, this is kind of cool. Who is this? Right. You know, and that happens a lot in this household. I mean, there's always music in this household. So it just, one way or another, it's like the education of my music in general for me, it just, it's been expanding a lot, or just living with David. You know, before I know it, I turn around and like, hey, I know who that is. Right. And, you know, never would have been able to pick that song out of like a library of music. Never. Now it's just pretty cool to be able to listen to these artists, especially like for him, because I mean, a lot of other people kind of like come up very out loud and proud and they're like they're beacons of light, so to speak. And that's not saying anything about people who are quiet about it, but they're very out and open from the beginning for whatever that may bring to them. But then to find out later that some of these artists who get to finally share themselves and you hear their music and you go back and you listen to things, you listen to it with a different ear and you're like, oh,
yeah,
now I get it. All right. And so I love that. I love that because I don't like that so many people had the hype, but I love that it gives you the opportunity to kind of go back and give somebody a listen again and think about what it took to get to that point and where they're at now. So hopefully that all makes sense.
Yeah, super good points.
Oh,
yeah.
It does. And like one thing about his lyrics, which has always been the case, is that they're not gender specific. In that way, he's kind of similar to, let's say, Melissa Etheridge.
That's great.
Damn you, David. You stole my point. I was actually going to bring that up nice. During Sam's song, actually, which is a similar situation where the artist doesn't mention a gender. But since you brought it up now, let's talk about that.
There like, you go.
Sam and I were just talking about how Elton John covered a song. And Elton John is, like Mark said, beacon of light, out and proud sort of guy. However, that song that he covered was early in his career. And he covered a song that had a gender-specific lyric to it. And he changed it because it was originally done by a woman. And him being a man, he changed the gender. He swapped the gender, which is surprising to me considering who he is. But looking back on his career, this was early in his career. And I don't think he was quite out and proud yet.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a very subtle way of, I don't want to say hiding the fact of his sexuality or the person's sexuality. But it's something I think of too, Dave, when I think of the person constructing the lyrics. And I don't know if it's that artist. I don't know if it's a producer somewhere down the line saying, oh, you can't do this. This is not going to fly. People are going to be repulsed sort of thing. Does that happen? Do you think that happens?
Probably decades ago, it probably would have happened. But currently, I don't think it would be an issue. One thing that comes to mind immediately, the flip side of that, is Lana Del Rey not too long ago covered a Sublime song, Due in Time. And the Sublime song features a line that's like, she spreads her loving around and then there's none left for me. And when Lana Del Rey covered it, she didn't change that.
Awesome. Good on her.
And I don't think she's LGBT, or at least not like usually, but she kept the line and I'm sure none of her fans mind either.
Excellent point.
Yeah, I think it's like genre specific though. Like if that happened in country.
I was about to say, country's a different story.
Country is like, yeah, decades behind everybody else, I think.
Yeah, Lana Del Rey fans are probably not the same as country fans.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least they're the more accepting fans of country, maybe more progressive.
But you know who I love, who I think is pushing that envelope, though, because they found a way to kind of channel the country music energy into other types of music, is Orville Peck. right? Because there's that edge to it, right? And so somebody somewhere along the line is going to be like, oh, that gay cowboy's music is kind of cool. And I'm going to go over here and listen to this. So it's interesting to see what he's doing, right? Because, you know, obviously there have been other people along the way, even as far back, I think his name was Ty Herndon at one point, was very open, but, you know, that caused a scandal, then, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. People kind of just disappear, but it's not that folks haven't tried. It's a hard nut to crack, definitely.
Right. Yeah. And it's not that they didn't exist either. Like they are there. Just whether or not how open they are able to be while maintaining the career that they want. Right. And I think that's the trick with country music is that at least up to this point, it's been very hard to be openly gay and get radio time and support from the country, like officials.
It's funny because in when you flip that, there are so many gay country fans, you know,
because
of groups like the Judds, you know,
totally.
And because of Reba McEntire,
Dolly Parton,
Dolly Parton, especially Dolly, Queen Dolly. I mean, come on. So it's just the support is there for the music. The love doesn't go both ways, obviously, for reasons. Right. But it is there. So, yeah, I wonder if there will be an artist that will eventually bridge all of that. And Dolly's certainly one of the biggest ambassadors there, right? So, but it would be cool if it were a, you know, male singer, because that kind of, you take that edge off, right? Because that's the hardest nut to crack in that whole group of people. It's like making that a little bit accessible for everybody.
Yeah. And that's a great teaser for part two of this of this month's episodes, because we will talk about an openly gay male singer in the country world.
Woo-hoo!
And some of the things that he's kind of struggling with right now.
Ride a cowboy.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want this to go too long, so I'm gonna put a pin in this now. And then at this point, Dave, you just ask everyone, like, what would you rate this out of five somethings?
Let me think. Oh, I know. What would you rate this song out of five loud bombs? We're going to go with loud bombs, the anagram of Bob Mould.
Nice.
So honestly, when I first heard this song, it's like, this isn't my jam at all. This is not the music I gravitate towards. But the good thing about the pod is I'm forced to listen to it several times. And so like with any music, as you shouldn't just listen to it once and just write it off. But my first impression was like, I think it's okay. As I listened to it more, I started picking out more things, more guitar licks, more layering, the cello part, all that comes together and it grew on me a lot. And so I landed somewhere between a 3 and a 4 initially, but after listening to it several times and having the song grow on me, I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 loud bombs. I appreciate everything it does. I appreciate all the layering. I appreciate the vocal harmonies, even though vocally, he's not the most technical vocal singer. He makes it work. He makes it work for this song. And I don't go 5 out of 5 because I'm not sure if I would reach for this in my normal music listening. However, you do have me curious. That may change. I do want to go down the rabbit hole of Bob Mould and Fugazi and Sugar and Husker Du and so on and so forth. That whole scene is, like I said before, a musical blind spot for me that I want to dig into. And I appreciate you giving me this song and pushing me in that direction to at least check it out. It may not be for me. That's totally fine. But I at least want to know for sure. I at least want to give it a chance. 4 out of 5 loud bombs.
All right. 4 out of 5. Well, thank you for listening to things that are not your wheelhouse. And you would probably like the Husker Du stuff more than his solo stuff, I feel.
Yeah, a lot of metal owes a lot to punk when it comes to the genre and how it was built and the influence that came from the building blocks of metal. So it makes a lot of sense that I should listen to punk.
Sam, how many loud bombs do you give Bob Mould?
So I will give Bob Mould 3 out of 5 loud bombs. It's a good song. It's like a solid 90s alternative chill rock esque song.
David nailed it on the head. You can hear this on K-Fog. You can hear this on Top 40 or easy listening sort of thing.
Totally. And it's one of those songs where I would love to see it in like a movie that's kind of like a silly 90s rom-com thing, like 10 Things I Hate About You.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's a perfect song. I never thought of that, but that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I would love to see it like that. But like Peter was saying, I don't think I would reach for it when I'm feeling emo. Like I want something that's gonna like rip my heart out and make me cry ugly tears and all that stuff. So, but I think it's
same, Sam. Same.
Was this a bit too subtle?
Yeah.
Alrighty, 3 out of 5, and Mark.
All right, I will give this 4 out of 5 loud bombs. For the reasons that have all been brought up, it's one of those songs that it's enough of a doorway into a person's music that it makes you want to dive deeper and find out a little more. Now that I know the basics about the artist, there's so much there to like find out about. And so I think just in that in general, I really love the lyrics and I want to see how much more of the music is like this, you know, like what else do they bring to the table with their music over the years and to see where they're at now. Yeah, just it's one of those songs, like you folks said, it's like I would never necessarily go out of my way for it. But now that I'm aware, it just makes you stop and like, oh, look at all these connections. And I love that. I love that when one artist, it just makes you like branch out to all these other things. And then down the rabbit hole you go and the next thing you know, it connects somewhere with your music tastes. And so, yeah, good song.
Okay, I'm up next.
Yeah, so Peter, what song do you have for us?
Everybody, please be honest, because I know this is this is not an easy thing to listen to. Okay, what I have for you today is by an artist called, or a band called Liturgy. The name of the song is Sem's Lament, and it comes off of the album Origin of the Alimonies. It came out in 2020, and it's an avant-garde black metal project. This album in particular is labeled an opera. So to give you a little context of everything surrounding this song, I don't know if you get the impression, I'll let y'all talk about that later, but there should be something before it and after it. So it kind of feels like there's a question mark at the end, and it feels like there's like no real intro to the song. It's just like piano and vocals, like right away, you're thrown into the shit, but there is something that precedes it. More on that a little later. So the artist, it's essentially a solo project. I know it's a band, but it's a solo project. And the brainchild of this project is Hunter Hunt Hendricks, who came out in May 2020 as trans. So Hunter Hunt Hendricks was afraid of coming out. But she says, I'm a woman. I've always been one. The love I have to give is a woman's love, if only because it is mine. And that's a direct quote from her.
Oh, that's beautiful.
She knew she was trans. She knew she was a woman even before the band formed in 2005. But she kept quiet out of fear. What would her bandmates think? What would the metal world think?
So during that time then, did she perform as a man?
Yeah. And she finally said, this is it. I'm going to come out. And thankfully, the metal community has been pretty supportive. Similar to country, metal can be kind of machismo, macho male sort of genre. And so...
this is my shocked face.
I know. there are trailblazers like Judas Priest.
I was just going to say.
Rob Halford of Judas Priest, all the way from back from the 70s. So it's persisted in the metal community, and it's been mostly accepted, at least from my perspective. But there is a segment of the metal population that's like, no, we don't want this, which is unfortunate. Okay, so going more into the album, it is a rock/metal opera. It has an overture, it has 3 acts. There's characters in it. Sem, the name of the song, Sem's Lament. Sam is one of the characters. Another character is Olalan. It is spelled O-I-O-I-O-N. And there's a 14-minute interlude after this song. And then the third and final act is like an armistice. And so stepping back a little bit more, Hunter Hunt Hendrix is also a theologian. She has her own philosophy and idea of how the world came about. And this album is essentially kind of a way of projecting her idea of her philosophy or her theology, if you will. It's an attempt to explain the origin of all things. I know it sounds a little culty. She's not a cult leader or whatever. She does have a ton of videos explaining her theology. I don't think she has like a cult following, so to speak, but she just explains, this is what I think, this is how I feel. And I can't begin to explain it myself. I don't want to do that because I would get so many things wrong. If you are interested, dear listeners, Hunter Hunt Hendrix has a YouTube channel and she explains the characters, the gods she names, and what she thinks of how we all came to be. Okay, so this song in particular, there's a song preceding it called The Fall of Sam. I actually thought about giving this song instead, but there's no vocals on it. It's just a straight up instrumental piece with, you know, of course, the classical parts, the opera parts, the traditional instruments you think of when you think opera or symphony. But it's in a more modern sense because there's also electric guitar and so on and so forth, modern instruments. I know opera is generally thought of as old music and it's just symphony and vocals, but in the more modern sense, rock operas do exist. You listen to the album overall, it definitely flows from act to act or song to song and has this whole feeling of a concept album or a rock opera. All right, so the reason why I gave this song to you too, believe it or not, it is probably the most accessible piece on this album. The rest of it is pretty hard to grasp.
Because of the music?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I remember I was playing this album in the car the other day and Sam was like, can we change the song? She couldn't take it anymore. And I'm like, yes, that means the song is amazing. That means this is awesome. The more harsh it is to the ears, for some reason, I have an attraction to that. I like to hear dissonance. I like to hear microtonal, which is all over this album. And it creates this discomfort that I like for some reason.
Hate that shit.
This song in particular is kind of an outlier when it comes to the rest of it, but it also fits in the grand scheme of things. This song fuses black metal, trap of all things, weird, djent and classical all together. There's piano, there's black metal shrieks. And if you're not familiar with that particular type of shrieking or screaming or growling, it sounds more like banshee, like a banshee-like shriek versus a guttural death metal.
Because who doesn't want to listen to a banshee?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's just harp, there's strings, there's of course drums and guitar. So it's a big mix of old and new. Avant-garde black metal is the new stuff. Classical and opera, the old stuff. It's a mix of electronic. It's a mix of organic. All right, so that's basically all I got to say about this artist and this song in particular. Let's start with your impressions. So, Sam, this is going to be great. You're going to love this song, I'm sure. You're going to dig into it and give me a 5 out of 5. I'll let you share your thoughts. So Sam, what did you think of this song?
I was listening to all of the songs in preparation for this month's podcast. I was like, haha, of course this is Peter's. Like, yes, I can clearly find Peter's song amongst the four of ours. When I first started to play it, I was like, my first impression was Hiromi meets Arch Enemy, right? So it's like
okay. That
piano, funky, modern jazz meets growly metal music, mm-hmm. right? And so I was like, okay, that's an interesting juxtaposition, right? Mm-hmm. And then it started to get more and more complex as you go along. Like, I feel like that's the theme of Peter's songs. There's multiple movements, and this song is no exception to that. I liked, there was an interesting overlap of like light sounds that are coming from a flute, I think it is, and correct, piano. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It starts off with this very interesting overlap between this high pitched flute and piano sounds. And then on top of that, it's like interrupted by these growls, these growly vocals. Mm-hmm. And then as the song moves on, the growly vocals start to be pushed into the background and are overtaken by like the strings that jump in and then the guitar that jumps in, and the growls are still there, but they're kind of pushed far, far back. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that that was an interesting dynamic. There's a lot to unpack here. But by the time you get to the end of, I think, what is relatively a short song for Peter, is that it all ended up blending really well. So it started off really jarring and providing this like very contrasting sounds, the growl mm-hmm. and the light pitched, high pitched noises. And then at the end, it all blended into this really interesting sound. For that, I thought it was an interesting exercise to listen to.
Interesting exercise, put it lightly.
And without further ado, I'll pass the baton on to Mark or David to share their thoughts.
All right, Mark, what do you think?
So obviously very, very interesting song. I loved how guttural it is. There's this rawness to it. Mm-hmm. It's like, I may not know exactly what's going on, but the emotion comes through. Mm-hmm. And not having watched the opera itself, it's like, I wonder where it fits in. It's like, where is the character at this point, right? How did he get to this point? Because I look at the lyrics and they're talking about a wound. One word that I didn't understand in it is like, but I can't take your infinite rays, R-A-E-S. So I don't know the context of that, unfortunately.
I don't either. I couldn't tell but, you.
Yeah, I wish I knew, uh-huh. right? But it caught my attention, to say the least. I just feel the emotion and the pain and the way that they're trying to get you to relate to it in their own way, obviously. Mm-hmm. By the way, when I heard it, David was playing it the other day. Well, that's Peter's song. I knew it. I was like, yeah, that's got to be Peter's song. So it's very interesting. It's almost like a harder edge repro, the genetic opera. There's some elements of that in this here too, and what they were trying to get across, right? But obviously this has a much more harder edge to it.
Yeah.
I honestly would love to know more about the whole opera in general, what it all means and what they're trying to tell as a story, the whole story and so forth.
Yeah, I tried to dig into it and unpack it. And I started watching some of Hunter's videos and it's like, mm-hmm. this is very intellectual stuff.
Okay.
I don't know enough about it, but she does go into her philosophy. And I think it would make sense coupled with her philosophy. But from what I can gather is there's two central characters, Ololan and Sam, and they're like two opposing forces, so to speak. That's what I gather. I could be wrong. It's a lot to unpack and a lot to dig into. And unfortunately, I'm only scratching the surface.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, what do you think?
Well, I find it very interesting that it's a part of a rock opera. But from just hearing the one song, I'm not surprised to hear that it's part of something bigger. Because after all that's going on in that one song, like there has to be more to it. Mm-hmm. And one question that I had was when she starts screaming, are there lyrics behind it or is yes. she just screaming? Oh, okay.
Yes.
I cannot understand them, but yeah. I think that they sound cool. And I also really liked how she fused many different types of music together. Mm-hmm. There's like pianos, classical, but there's rock guitars, some really cool drums. The first thing that came to mind when I heard the song is the Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Mm, yeah. Oh.
Because it has like the use of keyboards with guitars and hard rock over it. But then after listening a bit more, I started hearing tubular bells.
Yeah.
Like, and the thing is very majestic sounding and it goes out on like a hard stop.
Yeah, it just kind of ends. Yeah. So the reason why I picked this, not only am I drawn to the music because of the fusion of all the genres, and the album overall has a very dissonant and microtonal feel. And Sam shaking her head because she loves microtonal music. I don't know if this is a thing, but there's another artist called Victory Over the Sun. She's also a trans artist. She also does microtonal music. And I'm thinking about why, or why is there this correlation of trans artists to microtonal? I don't want to speak for the artist here, but in my head, what I'm thinking is there's a dissonance within this person. Growing up, they don't know how to deal with these emotions. So there's conflicting feelings. The two don't harmonize together. In other words, the outside of their body doesn't match the inside. So there's this dissonance within themselves. And so how do they express that musically? Well, if you do microtonal or anything dissonant, that is a very easy way to express that things clash together.
Yeah.
However, they are part of the same body, part of the same work. And so they belong together, but don't at the same time. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So the whole reason why I wanted to give you this artist was I also wanted to talk about the trans experience. Mm. I don't personally know a trans person. I've met some, but I don't personally know one as a friend. I don't have a friend or talk to someone on the regular. Mark or David, do you have people in your lives that are of this community?
Yes, I do. Actually, people that are just beginning their journey or have transitioned as well. You know, it's been interesting. I have one friend who I saw at Star Wars Celebration, and I finally had the chance to meet this person in person, right? We interact online and everything, but just the fact that, you know, I had to tell them, I was like, you sharing your journey, it's like, yes, we don't have the same journey, but seeing you and what you're going through helps me be a better person. I love that you share it. It helps others. But for me personally, it allows me to see the world through your eyes. And it's like, I really, really appreciate that. And I wanted to tell you that in person.
Awesome.
There's a lot of things that I don't know about quite yet, but it has been great as I get to know more people in the community. You know, they make me more aware of what it is to be trans. And so, you know, it makes you much more aware of the issues that they have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And obviously we see so much of that going on right now, especially. And obviously we need to be there to help them and to fight, because their livelihood, their lives are in danger at the moment. And it's pretty scary out there right now.
Yeah. Sam and I just watched a couple of documentaries on Netflix. One was called Disclosure, and it's about trans people in Hollywood, in film, in media, and all the stereotypes that the media has portrayed, the movies have portrayed, how it's always a punchline in comedies, how it's, if they're portrayed in Law and Order, CSI, so on and so forth, they're always killed, they're always murdered. They're like, this is what's representing us in the media. This is all that's representing us, and it's problematic. We need to see some change. And it's starting to happen with several shows and trans men and women being on shows and movies. And it's not like focused on their transness, so to speak.
Right.
They're just actors on the screen.
Yeah. And it's like actually being portrayed by trans actors. Right.
Exactly.
Like, I think that was the other thing. It's like previously it would just be like straight men usually cross-dressing and portraying trans characters. And nowadays there's a big push and more acceptance of trans actors actually portraying those roles, which then helps to break apart this idea that trans is just kind of like a thing that people can put on and then take off as like a role, right? Whereas if you have trans actors that are actually portraying trans characters, you see them like off screen as still being trans. So you start to see society accepting the fact that, okay, this is a core part of who they are versus just a role that somebody is portraying and then able to take off later, which I thought was a really interesting point of that documentary. And yeah. I highly, highly recommend that documentary for anybody who's kind of like want to like nerd out and learn a little bit more about the trans community. So one more plug, it's called Disclosure. I think it's really helped me understand that community a little bit more. So I highly recommend that for others.
One more plug for another Netflix documentary, Marsha P. Johnson, The Death and Life of Marsha P. Johnson,
nice.
Which we just watched yesterday too.
Yeah.
We're trying to educate ourselves. We're trying to know more about this community. You're right. Absolutely right, Mark. This community is very much in danger. And I can't imagine what it is like to just walk outside the door and just be constantly afraid for your well-being like that. Dear listeners, if y'all don't know what this documentary is, it's about Marsha P. Johnson, a advocate for trans rights and a very prominent figure for trans rights. And her death was suspicious. She's from New York and she ended up in the water in the Hudson River. And it was deemed quote unquote suicide by the police. But the community is looking at it and thinking, this is a little fishy here. It doesn't seem like that would be the case, but that's what the police said. They're like, suicide, write it off, close the case, let's move on. And that's a very unfortunate thing about not just Marsha P. Johnson, but the community in general. Like, they could have their lives taken from them. They could be beaten. They could have all this violence against them. And police are like, shrug. Hopefully the tide is turning. Hopefully there's going to be more justice for cases like this. So if anything, her death at least brings to light that, hey, there's a problem here. We need to look at this. We need to address this.
And I think both of these documentaries kind of really opened my eyes to the prominent role that trans figures played in the like origins of Pride and the origins of like the gay rights movement. And so I enjoyed learning about that. I did also struggle with the emotions of sadness that both of these documentaries like brought in me. So they're definitely not like a fun time, chill video or movie to watch. So if you are willing to, you know, feel a little bit uncomfortable and want to learn something and want to like explore this part of our history, I think there are great resources to start that journey. But it's definitely not a fun time experience to sit through.
Another prominent figure, Sylvia Rivera, is also a big part of the film. And it showed where she got up on stage, got up on the mic during a pride rally, and she was booed by the LGBT community. So even within the community, she felt ostracized.
Yeah, and definitely.
Yeah. She said, I fought for you. I've stood up for all of us here, and you're booing me? What is this? Why? Why is this happening?
It said that was featured in Pose as well, how at gay bars, at obviously the ones with men in it, they would have a big problem with trans people coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's like, it's been tough because you hate to see that within the community, we're supposed to be much more welcoming in that sense. And that happens not only with trans people, but with lesbians and so forth. You know, it took a long while for things to kind of come together. And that's not to say that there isn't some of that out there right now.
Yeah.
Just in general, you need to be a little bit more welcoming. I mean, I know nobody's perfect, but within our own community, it's something that really needs to be fixed.
The letters are LGBT are often put together, but there's a disconnect in between each letter too.
Yeah, that's something I'm learning. That is something I didn't realize. And it's fascinating to learn. It's fascinating to see. And yes, we have definitely made strides forward, but there's still work to do. Still a ton of work, myself included. I want to understand more about LGBTQIA+, all the spectrums and the differences. And I still struggle with it because like growing up, it was like gay, straight, the end. That's all I knew. That's all anyone talked about. And now there's this huge spectrum out and it's like, wow, this is amazing. This is blowing my mind. And I want to be better about understanding and learn about it. And just like understanding the differences between gender identity and sexuality too.
Mm-hmm.
That for me has been a learning process as well, because several years ago, my friend told me about a friend of his that's trans, went from man to woman, and then was lesbian, or is lesbian, I should say. My brain exploded. I'm like, wow. And then he said, you know, Peter, there's a difference between sexuality and gender. I'm like, thank you for educating me. Wow, that's he totally blew my mind. And I appreciated the learning experience and me growing. Okay, going back to the song here. we went kind of off the rails there.
No, but I'm glad you did. It's an important song. Yeah. Important song to bring up. And for that artist and who they are, it's important.
Yeah. So Hunter Hunt Hendricks, there's not very many trans figures in the metal community. I would like to say she's a prominent figure, but in the metal community, in metal in general, is very small. So there's not this visibility here. You know what I'm saying? It's not like if it was a major pop artist, so to speak, but it's still important that in this world, in this little subgenre, in this tiny niche of genres, there's a representation of a trans artist. Hopefully the community, the metal community, will be accepting of her as a person.
Well, I think in general, metal is pretty open in terms of like comparing the other genres. I feel like metal is made up of a bunch of outcasts already that they're pretty darn accepting of others.
Yeah.
Yep. But shout out to punk artist Laura Jean Grace, by the way.
There you go.
Nice.
Yeah, like my impression of metal is that they're very like fierce looking, but they're pretty open-minded too.
Let you in on a little secret. We're all just a bunch of nerds.
Yeah.
we're not the tough, like, I'm a big caveman, I'm going to beat someone up. There's people like that for sure. But the majority is just like nerds like me.
I've never felt safer than at a metal concert in terms of being surrounded by the crowd. You know what I mean? Like when you think about like metal music and concerts in general, like people tend to think, oh, they're wearing a lot of black and oh, they have piercings or long hair or there's like the pit, right? And yeah. So like that conjures up like this, you know, sense that they're violent and dangerous places to be at the concerts. And I've never felt that. I've felt that more at country concerts than I have at metal concerts. And I think that that speaks to the core of who is in the audience and the type of energy that they're giving off. And so I think if we're talking about genres that are more accepting of others and others' differences, I think metal would be one of those at the top.
All right, back to the song again. Let's wrap this up. And I'm going to ask, out of 5 trap hi-hat beats, what would you rate this song?
That's specific.
Yeah, very specific.
But so Peter.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll start with Sam. Out of 5 trap hi-hat beats, what would you rate this? And be honest, please be honest with me. I know this is not an easy genre and easy track to listen to. So let me know.
I'm always honest. I'm going to give it 2 out of 5 trap hi-hat beats.
Okay.
I do not enjoy dissonance. This song isn't super dissonant.
Yeah.
But there's enough of it in there that I don't really want to listen to it offline kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am super grateful that you have shared this song and this, more importantly, this artist with me, because I do want to support the trans community and I do want to support trans musicians. And I think that that's an important area to highlight and to talk about. So thank you for sharing that. But in terms of the music itself, no, it's 2 out of 5.
Absolutely fair. Thank you for that. Mark, what do you think? Out of 5 trap hi-hat beats.
I'm going to go with, let me do a 3 out of 5 here for the reasons, everything like Sam said. I mean, I love that my awareness of the song, the artist, all that is super important, you know, especially during this time. I may not connect with the music as well, but it's enough of where I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. Like, I like this, the pain in the song itself and reading the lyrics and everything, it's all there. I can definitely connect with that, but you know, not knowing more of the material, I wish I could. It's just, there's not much to go on. Other than that, I really do appreciate the fact that it was shared. So yeah, that's what I'm going to go with for this particular song.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And David, out of 5 trap hi-hat beats, what do you think?
Out of 5 trap hi-hat beats, you know, I found this song very interesting. It's not the type that I would usually find by myself, but I liked how it had a lot of classical elements in it. I liked the guitars. And as Mark knows, I'm a sucker for good screaming. And I felt like the screaming in that song was some of the best that I've ever heard. So I'm going to give it 5 trap hi-hat beats.
Whoa.
Out of 5.
Nice. What a shocker. I didn't expect that at all. Okay. I appreciate that.
And I want to see the full opera when it's ready.
Yeah, I do too. I hope to. I'll keep an eye on that and let y'all know. Okay. Thank you once again, Mark and Dave, for joining us. This is just part one, but David, you are a DJ, so to speak. You do this online segment called 10 at 10, and let us know what it is and what you do and where we can find it.
Oh, thanks for asking. So I put together a couple programs called 10 at 10, which is actually from the radio station KFOG, which is no longer with us. But the DJ who started it, Dave Morey, he put together 10 songs from the same year and mixed in news clips and media for that year in between the songs. And then after Dave Morey retired, it was taken over by Annalisa. And the station KFOG is no longer around, but I really missed hearing the 10 at 10. So I started making some of them myself. Some of them are the kinds of songs that KFOG played. And then other ones are ones that I wish KFOG would have played during their 10 at 10s. But since I'm making them, I get to put in whatever I want, which is pretty fun. I upload them to SoundCloud. You can find them by searching for my name, David Archwamedy. You can also search for the tag 10 at 10 and they come up. The most recent one that I did was for the year 1994. And it features some pretty big songs from the year, such as Real McCoy, Another Night, as well as some rock alternative songs like Meat Puppets, Backwater.
Meat Puppets.
Yeah. Like, there's a name that hasn't been thrown around in a while.
Yeah.
as well as some more obscure songs from bands like the Trip Hop Pioneers' Heights of Abraham and Rucker's Afghan Wigs. So check it out. 10 at 10, David Archwamedy on SoundCloud.
Awesome. I'll link it in the show notes as well and plug it on social media. Okay, awesome. Yeah, definitely check it out. Your latest episode with 1994, it's a banger. It has like Erasure in there. I think you ended with Warren G. Is that right?
I did.
That opening.
Warren G.
When I heard the opening, I'm like, I like almost leaped out of my seat. It's like, I haven't heard this song in a long time.
Awesome.
So I appreciate that.
I try to throw a little bit of everything into most of the episodes. Also, one of my favorite parts of the 10 at 10 from Dave Morey and Annalisa, and this is me being a geek, but I liked the sweepers and the announcements in between songs. Sometimes they say something that says 10 at 10, mm-hmm. or they mm-hmm. play the year like 1994, and they put the voice through a sound effect. I love doing that, so I try to include those on my show too.
I love every time you get to number 6, that effect that you put on your voice, and then it goes 6, 6, 6. I'm like, yeah, throwing up the horns. I love it, dude.
That was actually taken from the original show. The 6th song Dave Morey called Super Hit 6, that was usually a song that was like a bigger hit than K-Fog usually plays, and something that sounded a bit different than the rest of that set. It comes in with a grand announcement.
I shouldn't be surprised of how much thought you put into it and how thorough you are. I never listened to the 10 at 10, but I feel like I have because with DJ Dave's 10 at 10, it's pretty accurate. So check that out, everybody.
It's carrying on the tradition.
Hell yeah. Okay, there you have it. Part 1 of 2 of our celebration of Pride Month. Once again, if you'd like to check out DJ Davey's 10 at 10, go to soundcloud.com/David-Archwamedy. That's A-R-C-H-W-A-M as in music, E-T-Y. It's linked in the show notes for y'all as well. Please stay tuned to part 2, where we will cover Sam and Mark's tunes. Take care, everybody. Until next time. Thank you for listening to Two Songs, One Couple.
If you like what you hear and you want more, find us on
Spotify,
Apple Podcasts,
TwoSongsOneCouple.com,
Facebook,
Twitter,
and Instagram.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
I don't know why this triggered this memory, but Dave and I, for karaoke, sang this, The Boy Is Mine together.
Nice.
At a work, thing. God. It's like, what were we drinking? Because
we were drinking a lot.
No, I was just going to say, what weren't y'all drinking if you're saying that?
This is like a business thing. And we're like with partners, potential partners. It's not like we're not trying to like, hide things and trying to be, I don't know, in a business sense, I know it can be a little of a line to walk, but we were drinking and we're like, who gives a fuck? Let's just sing it.
I mean, karaoke in general is like a line to walk when you're trying to stay professional.
And it's just like such a ridiculous song in general. And it being, yeah. I think it being ridiculous kind of overshadowed any of the lyrics.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Thinking back on it, I was looking at it through beer goggles, but I don't think we upset anyone. That was years ago. So,
and if you did, who cares? Like, yeah, let them be upset. It's karaoke and y'all are drunk. Like,
yeah.
Who's going to take that seriously?
Yeah.
I want to see that though. Can you guys recreate that?
Oh, God, I know, no. Right? Exactly. No.
Give us a few drinks. That.
Yeah.
You need to give it up. Everybody. No, never mind.
Yay.